Welcome to another episode of I Pledge Allegiance. This week, we have on Alvin and Emily, the founders of Shadow. They're building some really neat tooling for crypto developers and recently launched their product. This week's episode will be hosted by Miles and Carl. They've spent a lot of time with the Shadow team and have put together a really awesome episode for you all.
Thanks again, Emily and Alvin, for coming on. And just to start, we'd love to hear a little bit about your background and what led you to start working on Shadow.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having us on. We're excited to be here. I think the first thing to mention is that Emily and I are siblings. So we've known each other for a very long time, have obviously grown up together, and we've actually worked together at the same companies, both in and outside of crypto for the last 8 years. So we were both at Airbnb for about 6 years. I was working on product and Emily was on the search engineering team, where she built out one of the first real-time indexing systems that Airbnb still uses site-wide today. We left Airbnb at the end of 2020 and both went down the DeFi summer rabbit hole, spent a lot of time playing with different protocols, farming. Emily was doing some MEV strategies as well. And we, at the end of 2021, decided that we wanted to contribute something a little bit more meaningful to this ecosystem. And so we contracted with some DeFi protocols in 2022 while we were exploring ideas. And one of the initial ideas that we had was to build a unified DeFi API that Emily can talk a little bit about.
Yeah, so the first idea that Alvin and I started exploring was to build a unified DeFi API. And we actually had a few customers who were interested in using it. And we started building out this API using more traditional Web2 infrastructure. And that was when we started like really feeling the pain of dealing with incomplete or incorrect on-chain data. And we basically saw firsthand how complex and messy on-chain data really was. And after building this product for a couple protocols, we realized how unsustainable it was at the end of the day. Basically, for every protocol that we integrated with, I was building this out and I just thought to myself, like, oh man, I wish they had this event, or I wish they designed their events in a different way. And that's basically how we came up with the idea of Shadow. We built out a proof of concept of Shadow in like 3 days just to make sure the idea would work and that the concept was sound, and then started productionizing Shadow for ourselves. So as we started talking to customers, we very quickly realized that the underlying Shadow infrastructure was a lot more valuable than the initial idea of our unified DeFi API.
Yeah, so it was very much a case of we had built some internal infrastructure that customers started asking for. And so we quickly realized, like, let's make this the thing. One of the things that we kind of found out was that for most customers, they have very custom on-chain data indexing needs. And so having like high abstraction APIs didn't really work. They'd have to usually augment that with additional data. And so Shadow, which we can talk more about, gives people full control to write custom data that they can use in their indexing and analytics.
Super interesting, and love when these customer discovery journeys maybe lead you to an insight that you didn't have when you started. And maybe just to crystallize that, were these folks that really gave you this insight consumers of data, or were they actually the developers, the first party producers of the data?
They were consumers of the data. So you can think of DeFi dashboards, like other kinds of data dashboards that try to interpret and like present information about what's happening on chain. And the core insight, I guess, behind Shadow is that data consumers today are not data producers themselves. And what if you gave them the ability to be data producers themselves? And so with Shadow Forks, you're able to effectively modify smart contracts to get the exact data that you want in a completely permissionless way that doesn't affect any sort of state on mainnet.
Yeah, that's awesome. So before we go into Shadow, I think it'd be helpful to take a quick step back and understand events, because Shadow is really redefining the way that events work, as you described a little bit already. Could you maybe give us a quick background on events and logs and how they're used today or historically in Ethereum? And then we can get into what it is that you guys are changing.
Yeah, definitely. So in traditional software development, people use event logs to understand what's happening in their products and their code. So this is what kind of powers all sorts of product analytics, observability, advertising as well. And so smart contract developers use event logs in a similar way, or they try to use it in a similar way, where they emit events to communicate to the outside world what's going on when a smart contract function is being executed. But smart contract event logs are much more limited and constrained compared to the kind of situation in Web2. The first problem is that they're highly inflexible. So the deployer of smart contracts needs to pre-design the events that will be part of the contract before they deploy. The analogy here is, like, imagine if a Web2 app needed to understand all of the data that they would ever want from user activity before they even launch. It's kind of like an unreasonable ask in our view. And as a result, we are in a situation where many events are incomplete or they're missing data because it's just simply very hard to predict how everyone will want to, like, kind of analyze and get data out of that contract. The second problem is that events are gas expensive. So to date, over $700 million have been spent in gas just to emit events on Ethereum. During periods of high activity, so in November 2021, users spent $73 million just in 1 month to emit events. And for the vast majority of users, they don't really care or even know what an event is. And so there's a lot of unnecessary cost in some ways with the ways that events are kind of like cost gas in the EVM. Every event costs about 50 cents to emit. So for a single stable to token swap on Uniswap, it costs about a dollar to emit the events related to that. And so we see, like, for those two reasons, the inflexibility and the gas costs, that the amount of on-chain data that is kind of emitted today is fundamentally constrained. And so we thought a lot about what are ways that we can kind of, like, break those constraints. And then do you want to talk a little bit about how that's different from Web2?
Yeah. It's sometimes helpful to think about the state of the world event logging in Web2 versus Web3 in crypto. So in Web2, when you go on any site or use any product, like if you're using Airbnb or if you're using Google, everything that you're doing in the product on the site, Airbnb and Google or any other company is logging every possible piece of information that they can get from your request, from your user session. And the reason why they do that is because, one, storage is really cheap. So it's super cheap to just log everything under the sun because it doesn't cost that much. And then two, once that request is done, once that user has visited the site, if you did not log the information that you needed from that user session, from that user request, that data is gone and you have no idea what happened. So in Web2, what you end up with is these really, really large data sets that are raw, stored in these really massive data lakes. And then there's a lot of data engineering work that goes on top of it just to clean up the data, to make the data more usable and usable in the product, usable for analysis, et cetera. The parameters are a bit different with blockchains, right? Logging events is costly. And you also have this immutable ledger where you can actually re-execute all of the transactions and get the perfect kind of point in time state at every request. So instead of logging everything up front, you can log minimal events. And if you ever need historical data, you can actually just go back in time, rewind history, replay history, and get the exact data that you need in the exact format that you want. So the analogy here is, like, if you were to use something like Shadow, you would be able to do away with a lot of the complex, like, ETL pipelines and data pipelines that you might see in Web2.
So maybe just to summarize the problem before moving on to shadow events, I think the inflexibility to alter any definitions or any logs once you've deployed the contract, that seems kind of crazy to me. But then second, I guess, is it fair to say that there is sort of an unfair tension here between the needs of data producers, the developers, and data consumers, and then the actual end users of these applications, in that the more information that a product manager or, say, an analytics provider gets, the more cost that actually gets put onto the user when they interact with those contracts?
Yeah, that's exactly right. In crypto today, the data consumer is not the data producer and is not the data payer. And so what we are trying to do with Shadow is to make those a lot more aligned, like where the incentives are aligned. The people that want to get additional data are able to, in the sense that they literally have the control to do so, whereas before they did not. And then at the end of the day, they would be the ones paying for the additional data that they want. This makes the lives of smart contract developers easier, because instead of having to try to predict everything that everyone might ever want from their smart contracts, they can kind of just emit a slimmed down version of events, emit the critical set of events that they know that either themselves or everyone else will definitely need, and then leave the other types of events that people might want to get, or the types of data that people might want to get, up to other folks, because they now have control.
Okay, yeah. So what are shadow events or shadow logs, and how do they differ from the events that we've described so far? And what is it that you guys are building with Shadow, the actual product?
I think it's actually good to start with just like how blockchains are designed today. Blockchains are optimized for serialized writes, but not for reads. So with Shadow, a lot of what we think about is, what if there was something that looked and felt like a blockchain, but was instead highly, highly optimized for reads? And so the infrastructure that we've built allows anybody to run an off-chain execution environment. This is what we call a shadow fork that mirrors the state of mainnet in real time and are highly optimized for data access. So you can kind of think of them as like parallel universes to the actual chain, where you as a user have full control over the read path in that universe. So on your shadow fork, you can modify the contract code of any deployed contract to add extra data accessors like event logs and view functions. And so these shadow events are added to the deployed contracts. We effectively replace the bytecode at that contract address and then re-execute mainnet transactions on your shadow fork. And as a result, you get these additional event logs. And from there, you can access those event logs in the ways that people are familiar with accessing on-chain data today, where we've built a shadow RPC that looks and feels exactly like a mainnet RPC, and you can export the data into your systems in other ways as well.
Okay, yeah. So I think we previously presented these three groups of people that might be involved here, right? You have the data producers, which are the developers of the smart contract who are trying to understand, what events should I be emitting? What can I leave out of my contract when I deploy it on chain? Then you have the data consumers. These are people who want to read events because they're doing research, analysis, whatever that might be. And then you have the actual users of the contract. So these are the ones that are paying transaction costs. And if there are events, they're paying for those events on chain. Can you walk us through for each of them what the changes are and how it kind of impacts the way that they're going to interact with events going forward?
Yeah, let's start with the data producers. So the data producers today are the smart contract developers that are deploying their contracts on mainnet. With Shadow, they can now approach the way that they design events with a lot more intentionality. So they can choose which events are in the critical path for their own systems and the ones that might be in the critical path for other folks, and basically keep those events on mainnet. Most of the smart contract teams that we've talked to have had a backlog of events that they wish they could add, but they decided not to in order to make their contracts more gas optimized, or maybe they have run up into the 24 kilobyte contract code size limit. And so those types of events are extremely good candidates to run on a shadow fork. And for the data consumers, so these are people who are analyzing on-chain data, maybe they're building platforms that present on-chain data, they now have this entirely new world where they can define the exact data that they want on any contract and go in and specify exactly what data they want to get out of each contract. They no longer need to rely on the events that the smart contract developer decided to include when they deployed the contract. There's some different ways that we sort of see both of these groups using Shadow. We don't really pretend to know what's best for each party. The main thing that we're trying to provide is the set of tools and infrastructure that really gives people control and presents like a level of intentionality that they can use to decide what data they want and what data they want to include on chain. We're not prescriptive in any way about what should be on chain versus off chain. Most of the teams that we have talked to do some sort of event audit where they go event by event and look at what are the implications of keeping this on mainnet versus off chain. There's kind of this calculation that you can do around how often this is emitted, who's paying the gas for it, who's actually consuming this data downstream, and how critical is it to my actual like web apps user experience. And so these are all considerations that we think the teams themselves are the experts in, and they're the ones that can make the best decision for that. On the payer side, so the end user, we are trying to create an experience where there's basically no difference to them. The only difference is that they are paying less in gas to perform the same types of actions. And if we are building things right and if we're working with the right people, there is really no difference from a user experience perspective to the end user, except for everything they do is a bit cheaper.
Got it. Super helpful. Before getting into the implications of a post-Shadow world, we'd love to hear a little bit more into the product itself, who you're selling to, and how your users are leveraging it. And when I think about this from an outsider's perspective, I'm thinking, okay, if you have a developer customer, does that just give them a fork of a certain set of contracts that they own? Or is it a fork of all of Ethereum mainnet? Or say like a developer that's for building a DeFi application, let's say that they're using Shadow, do they have a choice now to make that public, or they have an option that maybe they keep it private and say data consumers would need to become customers as well to kind of get access to all that data? Just would love to hear how your customer landscape looks like and how you think about this.
I think the first thing to mention is that a Shadow fork contains all contracts that exist on mainnet. And the control you have is that you can modify any of those contracts to add additional event logs, additional view functions, but your Shadow fork always contains all the contracts on mainnet. And you kind of specify which contract addresses you want to modify. For each Shadow fork, there is a direct mapping to like an RPC. That's how you get the logs that exist on your Shadow fork. And so from a user experience perspective, what it actually looks like is you spin up a Shadow fork in one click. It's kind of like entirely yours. It doesn't interact or sync or anything with any other Shadow forks. It doesn't affect anything on mainnet. And you just have this kind of like isolated instance of a Shadow fork where you have full control. And so in our product, you can search for a contract address, pull it up. You have a view that looks like a block explorer, like a lightweight block explorer for that contract address. And you can open up edit mode on that contract. So we have a browser IDE where you can modify the contract, see the code diffs between the original version of it and the one that you're working on in Shadow. And that's where you add your Shadow events. You click deploy, and then we compile the Shadow contract that you've modified into bytecode. So it's bytecode that is different than the mainnet contract bytecode. We deploy that onto your Shadow fork, and we immediately start re-executing transactions on top of your Shadow Fork with your modified bytecode. And so you can repeat this process 10, 100, 1,000 times across various contracts. And as you build upon your Shadow Fork, we version that out so that you can kind of keep track of which changes you've made at when. And each version of your Shadow Fork, you can access the data that was generated through the transaction re-execution there. Today, Shadow Forks and the Shadow RPC are default private. We are working on tools to be able to make that public so that other people can access data that you might have added into your own Shadow Fork. We think that there may be a new role in the ecosystem for something that we kind of like refer to as the on-chain data engineer, where this is someone who is very knowledgeable about protocols. They're knowledgeable about people's downstream data needs, and they are familiar enough with Solidity to modify existing contracts and add a few lines of code to emit additional data from those contracts. So they could design events and event models across protocols for other people to get value from. This might be a Solidity developer who's very data literate. It might even be a data scientist who gets dangerous enough with Solidity. But we sort of see this kind of like interpretation or curator role rising within the on-chain data ecosystem so that not everyone has to understand the intimate details of all the contracts and what events they would want to add. You could instead review the shadow contract changes that someone made and decide to adopt them into your own shadow workspace to get that data if you wanted to.
That's really cool. So today's equivalent is maybe how we have SQL developers who query a bunch of on-chain data tables, or at least data that's been indexed from on-chain events, and then present those in dashboards, you know, on places like Dune and stuff like that. And then people leverage those dashboards, or they import the queries and then edit them. Are you imagining a similar scenario here as you described, where people go in, they build custom events based off of different contracts that marry data sets together and kind of present a much more refined and much more useful or impactful event, and then share that or present it or maybe even sell it in one way?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we think Dune has done an amazing job democratizing on-chain data insights. And obviously, there's a large community component to who is creating spells, like who's creating dashboards. And so we sort of see shadows having opportunity to do that at one level lower, so like at the actual event design level, and take it a step further and further kind of democratize the types of data that people can get from on-chain activity. So we're excited about that kind of like possibility there. Today, as I'm sure you're aware, all the kind of analytics that happen on Dune still rely on the event logs that the smart contract developer decided to include when they deployed the contract. And as we talked about before, sometimes this data could be incomplete, it could be slightly inaccurate, and you see through hundreds and hundreds of lines of code in these Dune spells, people trying to transform and reformat the data that is being emitted into things that are a little bit more usable within an analytics platform like Dune. And so we sort of see Shadow as giving people even more control over how that data is emitted so that some of these downstream analytics pipelines can be much more simple and streamlined.
The other thing I would add there is previously, before Shadow, in order to write data pipelines with on-chain data, you had to kind of have this specialized skill set of knowing SQL, knowing things like Flink and Kafka to even just build out a pipeline. What's really interesting with Shadow, I think, is that it empowers someone who knows a bit of Solidity to write data pipelines basically directly in the smart contract. And people have different skill sets, and there are going to be people who want to build out their data pipelines in a more traditional manner. But there's also a lot of people who would be able to now build out data pipelines because they know Solidity, because they know smart contracts.
Yeah, this kind of like Solidity data engineering role is super interesting. That's really cool. You guys are creating like a new environment for Solidity developers or engineers to kind of create additional roles for themselves and additional responsibilities. Very cool. So in your view of the future of Shadow and the world with Shadow logs, do you expect smart contract developers to basically completely get rid of any sort of events on chain with the knowledge that, well, we'll just use Shadow events. And so why would we put anything on chain if we can just use a Shadow version, and that way we save on gas costs and we get all the benefits that we described, right? Or is there kind of a middle ground here? How do you envision the actual contracts that are deployed changing in the future?
I think it's actually interesting to even take a step back and talk about like what event logs actually are doing. And so our view is that the only real quote unquote source of truth on blockchains are state transitions. Event logs, whether they're on mainnet or they're on some off-chain environment like Shadow, they're just a semantic wrapper or an abstraction of sorts to describe what's happening. And so before, only the contract deployer could define these abstractions before the contract was deployed. And so now with Shadow, using this kind of off-chain infrastructure, anyone can write their own semantic wrappers on top of a single source of shared truth, which is mainnet state transitions. So we don't pretend that we know better than the developers themselves on what should be included on mainnet versus not. We are very focused on giving them really good tools and infrastructure to approach that with intentionality. And people can decide and review what sorts of data they feel is critical to keep on chain and which ones can be moved off chain. So there's kind of this trade-off of how often is a certain event being emitted? Is there certain data that within that event that should be on chain versus can be off chain? Who's actually paying for those events to get emitted? And what sorts of like downstream data consumers would benefit from additional events and additional data that you could include off chain? And so we're excited to just kind of see where people take it. Some people do see it as an opportunity to move most of their logs off of mainnet onto an off-chain environment. But at the end of the day, that's completely up to the smart contract developers themselves. And to pair with that, data consumers now have control to get whatever data they want. And so the powerful thing here is that even if smart contract developers decide to move stuff off of mainnet, they could publish the events that they would include off-chain, and then other data consumers can just adopt those, or they can write their own ones entirely and get the data that they need.
The other thing I would add there is our objective with Shadow is not to move mainnet logs into Shadow logs. Our primary objective really is to 10x or 100x the amount of on-chain data that people can look at and that people can access, because we are making it hopefully 10x or 100x easier to actually access this data.
I think that makes sense. And I think that that maybe was lost on some folks, not necessarily for anybody's fault, but more just because I think this is in line with just a general trend that we see on Ethereum L1 right now, which is in optimizing for solo stakers and lots of other things related to censorship resistance and decentralization. There's a lot of constraints put on developers. And right now, I think competition between dApps does center around cost, particularly for DEXs. And so do you also see this as just kind of a coincidence of timing that we have things like coprocessors and obviously rollups and so much being pushed off chain, and makes sense as well to push a lot of something like event logs that could add costs to the end user off chain as competition heats up? But I don't think that that was ever really the goal of Shadow. Is that a fair observation of the current state?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're definitely right that there seems to be a broader theme beyond just event logs, right, of moving stuff that is compute heavy or storage heavy off chain in order to make more room and create more block space to be available for what's important to have consensus on the actual chain. And so I think Shadow is one manifestation of that broader theme for sure.
Right. And, you know, to your point, it's not like in the previous world that anything you see on an event log is actually equals truth, right? But it at least everybody was looking at the same version of events and seeing the same deficiencies or seeing the same ability to like see the same truth if the events are obviously correct. And I guess, how does this world look in a post-shadow event world? Let's say that more and more developers do choose to push events off-chain. How are you guys thinking about working with block explorers or different analytics teams, basically to be able to continue to provide the same level of data that they have been providing today and potentially even way more data, right? I think that's probably what gets lost on people, but there's some sort of scariness to not everybody looking at the same truth, right? In the same very limited event logs. But how are you working with these external parties as we transition to this new world?
Two things that we believe will be very important in this world where there are 10 to 100x more data being emitted on stuff that looks like shadow forks is, one, discoverability. So right now, you know, on mainnet, everyone has access to the same logs, just like you said. On shadow, you have these separate forks that people can create and write their own. We believe that it's really important that if a shadow contract author wants to make their shadow contract changes publicly available, that it should be very easy for other people to see that. The second thing is data verifiability. So we believe it's really important that given a particular shadow contract and its bytecode and that it's deployed on a shadow fork, that anyone can kind of verify that the logs that they're getting back from that instance is what they would expect, and that nothing wonky is happening at the RPC level or at the shadow fork level. And so one of the first steps that we've taken with trying to drive towards these two outcomes that we think are important is the ERC 7571 that we put out a week or two ago. Emily, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So our goal with ERC 7571 was to really align on an open standard for how shadow events are specified, discovered, and fetched. And this ERC was meant to allow anyone to implement according to this open standard while ensuring a consistent integration path for all of the downstream data consumers, data infrastructure providers, and data tooling. And at the end of the day, we believe that shadow events are inevitable. So it's really important for the ecosystem that there's a consistent interface to write them and read them. And while there might be 100 different implementations of shadow forks, and we believe that it's actually a really good thing for the ecosystem if there are, it's important that there aren't 100 different standards and specifications for how to actually interact with these shadow events.
Yeah. And so we very intentionally kept the scope of ERC 7571 very narrow to just the syntax of how blocks of shadow code should be specified so that tools like Foundry could recognize them and basically from one source code file generate a version of bytecode for mainnet and a version of bytecode for a shadow fork, and that you could take that contract source code and that shadow bytecode and bring it to any shadow fork provider that may exist in the future. And to go back to kind of like the other data companies that exist in the ecosystem today, we have been actually already working with most of these folks to figure out what it means for them if more and more data is being emitted on shadow forks, whether that is data that is being moved from mainnet to a shadow fork or just net additive data on a shadow fork. And so one of the very intentional product decisions that we made was to focus on making our shadow RPC look and feel just like a mainnet RPC. This makes it really easy for any sort of downstream data consumer to interface with shadow events very similarly to how they interface with and get mainnet event logs today. It's a simple swap of like an RPC URL for most folks. And we did that intentionally so that there was much more kind of simple integration paths for all of these companies.
I really like what you guys have done with 7571. Can you walk me through the annotated comments section? If I understand it correctly, the goal here is to basically let a developer define a shadow block, right? So events that they would emit in a shadow fork, but not on chain. And then using popular tooling like Foundry or whatever, they would convert those into comments when it actually comes time to upload them on chain, such that they're not actually put on chain, right? But they are still accessible from a contract source code tool like Etherscan or whatever. It's kind of the goal there to make first-party developers who are the core developers of a contract be able to share what it is that they're going to be doing at a shadow level and kind of communicate with everybody else, hey, here's what I've done with my shadow logs, just FYI. They're commented out, they're not going to be on chain, but you can see what it is that I'm doing on a shadow log, and that gives you a good reference point. And then to your point, it makes it easier for other providers and other tools that are going to plug into those. Am I right there, or is there something that I'm missing?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Two things that we wanted to ensure with the shadow blocked comments was that, one, we didn't break anything in terms of backwards compatibility. So being able to have a format that works out of the box with any tool out there, even if they have not built custom tooling just to support shadow contracts and shadow blocks. And the second part of that is allowing all the existing tooling to still be able to have the shadow blocks visible in the code. For example, if someone were to be uploading their contract to Etherscan, for example, for the entire world to look at their source code, being able to upload the shadow blocks commented out allows everyone to look at the shadow blocks. Plus, it doesn't break backwards compatibility with Etherscan's contract verification.
Yeah, very cool. I really like that idea. It kind of makes it easier, right, going forward for people to keep track and get a good understanding of what might be the recommended shadow implementation. But then obviously, you still have that customizability once you decide to do whatever it is that you want to do, or you might want to play around with the way that they've done it. I also like the idea of, you know, anybody who's done any sort of coding is probably guilty of having left a bunch of code commented out with a to-do for later or something like that. But Shadow is actually telling you, no, that's a good thing. Comment it out. You're doing the right thing here.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right.
This is all incredibly helpful. And I'm just thinking about the future for Shadow. And obviously, an extremely compelling value prop on Ethereum L1 for both developers, data consumers, and end users, right, from a cost standpoint. But obviously, a lot of activity is migrating to L2s in other L1s. And I'm just curious how you're thinking about prioritizing growth between maybe doubling down on features for the Ethereum L1 product versus thinking about expanding to L2s. And then within that realm, how you would prioritize coverage within those rollups.
Yeah, definitely. So we are very actively working on L2 support. It's something that many of our customers have been asking for. So when we go back to the problem with the way that events work today on mainnet chains, the first one that we talked about was the inflexibility, right? The fact that only the contract deployer can define them, and they can only define them at a point in time before the contract is actually deployed. The second one is the cost of events. And so the cost of events problem is certainly, like, from an absolute value perspective, less of a problem on L2s, just given block space is much cheaper on L2s. But the inflexibility problem is very much still true. And people that we have been working with and that want L2 support still want to use Shadow for just that reason. I think the other thing is, when you look back to periods of high activity on L2s, the amount of gas still matters. Like, if you can shave 10% off of a transaction cost, that's sometimes worth doing. But we are excited about basically giving people more control over what events they emit on chain versus what events they can move off chain, and also what events that currently aren't even on chain at all or anywhere they can add to get a better understanding of what's happening. There's a lot of, like, interesting new types of protocol designs that are sprouting on L2s. Ren from Electric Capital had a really good tweet thread on this recently that talked about how there was material differences in the types of transactions that were happening on L2s versus L1s. And so when you have these new types of activity and these new types of protocol design, you're kind of starting all over again for trying to understand like what data is important for people to get. And so through that lens, having kind of like full control over the data that you want to emit at any point in time becomes really, really valuable for protocols and teams building on L2s and trying to make sense of the activity happening on L2s as well. And so as far as prioritization, we are very customer driven in that sense. We basically talk to lots of customers every day, every week, and people request certain chains. And so we are prioritizing very much based on customer demand.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And then as you guys are giving responses here, I'm just thinking, it seems like it would be fairly costly to do this. And how are you guys thinking about scaling your architecture for the hosted solution?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So we do run our own nodes, but a lot of how our infrastructure works, we kind of consider our secret sauce. The one thing I can say is that it's not like a one-to-one mapping of a shadow fork to a single node. That would be way too cost intensive. And so we've done some clever things to be able to scale that up and down really quickly, as well as the ability to backfill new events on historical transactions very, very quickly, right? And so for those reasons, I think using our hosted infrastructure can be a lot more performant, and depending on what you're trying to do, cheaper as well, compared to trying to run some shadow fork implementation yourself on your own node.
Totally makes sense. And maybe just as we're kind of wrapping up here, I'd love to hear about the grand vision for Shadow in, say, 5 years. I think we touched on this a little bit, but it sounds like this can develop into a really interesting marketplace model, but I'm not sure if that's how you guys see it, and would love to hear from you.
Our primary objective is to 10 to 100x the amount of data that is emitted and really drive the adoption of shadow events across chains, and also giving people the tools and data ingestion patterns that would make it very easy for them to integrate into their existing systems. One thing we're excited about with Shadow is that because we're starting at such a base level layer, it's at the smart contract level, you're kind of emitting new event logs. There's a lot of directions that we could build towards on top of that base infrastructure. And so we're still kind of like thinking through and talking to customers about what those downstream tools and products might look like and how they might differ from the existing set of tools and providers that exist for mainnet event logs. But right now, we're primarily focused on just 10 to 100xing the amount of data that's emitted, bringing shadow events to the chains that people want them, and making it easy for them to integrate them into the tools and systems that they already use. Yeah, 5 years down the line, who knows what could be built. I think there's definitely a play there where there is more of a marketplace of shadow contracts. We kind of sometimes refer to them as patches, where you can like pull down a patch written by somebody else. Maybe that person can monetize that because they're providing valuable insights or data with that. And then we can host the infrastructure that enables all of that. We definitely don't see ourselves as being this expert interpretation layer. We are very inspired and excited to see how people use Shadow. And we've already seen like lots of really cool use cases and implementations pop up. And so we want to do everything we can to try to get those new types of data creators visibility more publicly and hopefully be able to help them monetize that as well.
Yeah, because the Shadow customers are going to be both data producers and data consumers themselves, right? Because they're going to be the data consumers, and because the data consumers are using Shadow, one thing that we are going to be able to do is understand what the data consumers' different use cases are when they are writing Shadow events, and provide more optimized indexing strategies, all of that, for their use case. So for example, if a Shadow event writer comes to us, is writing Shadow events, and is able to tell us, okay, we want to use this for real-time analytics purposes. There are things that we can do on our infrastructure side to actually index all of this data in a way that makes it really easy to use for real-time analytics. And I think that's also a really powerful thing, that we have these direct relationships with the data consumers and data producers, where we can have really tailored experiences for their use case.
Yeah, I think it all kind of goes back to a higher level point that we discussed earlier, which is that blockchains are optimized for writes, but not reads. And so with Shadow, there's now something that looks and feels like a blockchain and is highly optimized for reads. And so what are all the things that you could do just with that single fundamental assumption change? And yeah, we're excited to kind of like explore that over the next many years and work with our customers to figure out what are things that they previously hadn't even like thought of they could do that they can now do on a Shadow fork that they control.
I'm sure you've noticed this coming from Airbnb, but I think the maturity of, say, like data-driven product decisions and, you know, product analytics tools like Amplitude don't really exist yet. We don't have a mature, I would say, either like marketing stack as well. And are these things that you think will mature with a world where there is 10 to 100x more data available around any sort of on-chain interactions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's exactly right. Like if you just compare the like sheer amount of data that an average Web2 company produces and stores and like looks at, it is much more than what the average crypto or Web3 company today has access to. And it's a little bit paradoxical in some ways, because blockchains are these kind of like open permissionless systems where anyone can kind of like build on top of them. Smart contracts are these building blocks, but the people who are trying to build on top of them don't have access to the data that they might need to effectively build on top of them. And so we're excited to kind of just open that up for people and see where people take it. And at the same time, like lower the cost that people are currently paying to emit additional data. I mentioned earlier that single event on Ethereum costs about 50 cents to emit in gas. And that's with kind of like the current environment of the price of ETH and just like what gas has been like recently. That's only going to go up as crypto becomes more widely adopted. And emitting and storing an equivalent amount of data in Web2 costs fractions of a penny today, right? So we're just excited to kind of like bring that closer to parity. And we think a lot more things can be built on top of that once this kind of like underlying infrastructure is in place.
I totally agree. I think the implications for the interpretation layer that's kind of going to be built on top of your platform is really, really exciting. So we've covered a lot of ground here and it's been amazing. And maybe just to wrap up with a small grab bag that we like to do, and Carly, feel free to chime in as well, but maybe just starting off, I mean, as sibling co-founders, what do you guys disagree on and how do you guys sort that out?
We definitely disagree on certain things. Sometimes it's definitely not all we're in agreement entirely. I think it has helped a lot that we have a very shared experience in terms of operating culture and core values, just having worked at the same companies for the last 8 years. So there haven't been like philosophical, like this is the right way to go about decision making or like kind of operating at that level, because we have that shared experience. When we do disagree on things, it's probably mostly around the scope of what we want to build.
I would say scope and sequencing are probably the two things that we would have disagreements on.
Yeah, that's right. Emily's obviously, you know, she's the CTO and she's the engineer, and there's the classic like product person wanting more sooner than what's realistically humanly feasible. And so I would say sorting through those, like really drilling into why we want to ship something by a certain date, those are probably the largest percentage of disagreements that we've had that are very tractable to solve and kind of just talk through.
Yeah, I think working with Alvin as my brother has felt like a cheat code in a lot of ways, in terms of kind of like thinking about the founder journey and thinking about starting a company together. There is just this baseline level of trust that is unwavering throughout the whole process. And when we do have disagreements, knowing that there's this baseline level of trust helps a lot and helps us get to the bottom of disagreements a lot faster.
Yeah, And something that we actually didn't mention, but is kind of an interesting additional piece of color, is our dad has been an entrepreneur our entire lives. He started a company that designs and produces semiconductors with his two siblings. And so they have been working on this ever since we were little. So we've seen kind of like a template or a model for how this works all throughout our lives, kind of growing up. Conversations at the dinner table, moving very fluidly between work topics to personal topics. And so it's been something that we're familiar with our entire lives.
That's incredible. It's really in the genes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of founders, they struggle to find a co-founder. It can be a tough thing to go through if you do feel like you need a co-founder, and it can be a tough process. So being able to turn to your brother or sister and for it to work for you guys, that's really awesome. It does sound like a really awesome cheat code.
Yeah.
It also makes coming into the office every day more fulfilling too, because it's like, not only are we working on things that we are very passionate about and excited about, but we also get to spend time with our family.
Yeah. Now the dinner table conversation is even more work-related, and you guys have even more to talk about with yourselves and your family. That's great. One question, going all the way back to this unified DeFi API that you guys were building initially, and correct me if I'm wrong, Emily, I think you had kind of started working on that based on MEV strategies and on-chain activity that you were doing, and you realized that was a pain point, and so you started building that solution. Eventually that pivoted to Shadow, right? But there was still this initial moment where you took what was kind of a solution for yourself that you were building, and you transitioned it to going after customers there. Can you walk me through the process of what was really just kind of your own tooling slash like your own little project? At what point did you guys decide, you know what, we should build something here and we should really go after and see if we can build a product?
Yeah. So with the unified DeFi API, we were talking to a handful of customers about that product itself while we were building it out. And as we talked to more and more customers after we had come up with the idea of Shadow and had built out a proof of concept of it, one common question that we got from customers was, okay, if I want to add a new protocol and want to use you guys for a new protocol, what's the turnaround time for adding a new protocol? And our initial quote that we would give folks was 1 to 2 weeks with the traditional Web2 infrastructure model. With Shadow, we had shrunk that timeline down to days or even like a single day or even hours. And as we talked to customers about that, they basically were like, whoa, how are you able to do that? And that provided kind of an organic entry point to sharing a little bit more about how we were doing it behind the scenes and the internal infrastructure that we built for ourselves. And very quickly in the conversation, we could just tell that the entire conversation switched to talking about Shadow, how it worked, how we built it. And I think it maybe took us like 2-3 weeks of talking to customers about still the unified DeFi API, but started sharing a little bit more and more about Shadow and the infrastructure underlying the unified DeFi API, that we realized that, okay, I think the Shadow infrastructure is something that is more interesting here. And a lot of customers actually told us that, like, they were like, instead of submitting a request to you guys to add a new protocol, could we just use Shadow ourselves and interact with it directly? And that's kind of what got our wheels turning of, oh, what would this look like if we actually just made Shadow the product itself?
That's awesome. This has been an amazing conversation. Alvin, Emily, we really appreciate having you guys on, and I really enjoyed our chat.
Likewise, it was fun to talk through all of these things. Appreciate the really good questions that you guys asked.
Yeah, thank you. Really interesting stuff. And we're super excited to stay in touch and catch up with Shadow.
Cool.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.